I came here and it snowed. Maybe when I leave, it'll go back up to 70 degrees again. Two, eight, four. If you're going to do it, do it.
Hare Krishna.
So the some of the audience is a Bhakti Vriksha group, and some of the others are friends or neighbors or local devotees or something. So the local Bhakti Vriksha group, of which our host is a member, yes? You're a member of a local Bhakti Vriksha group?
Yes.
Yes. And the group has been discussing Bhagavad Gita. So actually Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's a Srimad Bhagavatam study group under the name of a Bhakti Vriksha group. And that's okay. So far, the Bhakti Vriksha group is reading Canto 2, and they're up to Chapter 8. And Chapter 8 is a series of questions, the answer to which covers another canto and a half. So they're important questions, they're kind of core questions. And it's towards the beginning of text number 4. Very nice verse. Those of you that are in the front, come forward, so that those in the middle can come behind you, and those that are on the balcony seats can come into the room. Come forward. It'll stay warmer that way too. It's part of technology, body temperature technology. Shrinvatashraya nityam grinat grinatascha svacheshtitam kalena nati dirgena bhagavan vishate hridi bhagavan vishate hridi. Which feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated within the heart of every living entity?
Paramatma.
Question. How do you get Bhagavan Vishuddhe Hridi? The Bhagavan feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to become situated in your heart. This verse is saying, what's the difference between the Paramatma feature and the Bhagavan feature? What's the difference between the Paramatma feature and the Bhagavan feature?
The Paramatma feature is like a super soul, and the Bhagavan feature is the form.
And what's the function of the two? Paramatma feature's function is? Yes, you do know. The forms of Vishnu, the form of Vishnu situated within the heart, has to do with the affairs of the material creation. Maya Dyakshena Prakriti. He oversees Prakriti, Adyaksha. And that's not the fullness of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord does far more than oversees Prakriti. But the Paramatma expansion is for the purpose of creation. And the creation involves time, material nature, karma, living entities in la-la land, thinking they can become enjoyers of Prakriti. And Paramatma oversees all that. He oversees karma, he oversees guna, he oversees Prakriti. Paramatma feature. The affairs of material creation, that's Paramatma. And Bhagavan? Function of Bhagavan is? Yeah. Goloka or Vaikuntha. Question. When that lovely day comes that we go back to Godhead, that cherished goal of our lives, is Paramatma situated in the heart of all living entities in Goloka also? If Paramatma is not situated in the heart of every living entity, then where is God? Well, God is manifest in his swarup, his original spiritual form, as Bhagavan in the spiritual world. Narayana in Vaikuntha, Ramachandra in Ayodhya, that's the uppermost regions of the Vaikuntha realm, or Halidham. Nrisingadev has his Vaikuntha realm, and Krishna is situated in Golokadham. That's Bhagavan. This verse is saying how Bhagavan, Vishite Hridi, can be situated within the heart. So there's many nice verses in Brahma Samhita. One of them being how the devotee sees Shamasundar within the heart. That's not forearm part Madhma who's overseeing Prakriti. He sees Shamasundar within his heart. Yes? Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochanena Santak Sadaiva Hridayesha Vilokayanti Yam Shamasundaram Achincha Guna Swarupam Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. So that verse is speaking of the devotee who is situated in prema. And by being situated in prema of Govinda, because the Brahma Samhita is extolling Govinda, he sees the form of Govinda, or Shyamasundara. Two arms. By his love. And the Supreme Personality of Godhead shows himself according to the feature that the living entity has regard for. If they're worshippers of Nrisingadev, he shows that feature. If they're worshippers of other forms of Lord, he shows that feature. So how does one come to the stage of Bhagavan realization? Realization of the personality of Godhead in full. It's by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. We're all hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. So how come we're not seeing Shamsundar? Because we haven't come to the prema stage. So there's qualitative differences in how one hears Srimad Bhagavatam. But let's read the verse again. Shrinvata Shraddhaya Nityam. So Shraddhaya, it comes from Shraddha. It's Shraddhaya is in the condition of having Shraddha, or in Prabhupada is given the synonym here, in eagerness. So that's a qualification, a quality that enables Bhagavan feature to manifest within the heart is Shraddha, or in eagerness. Eagerness for what? Well, eagerness for a relationship with Bhagavan, because there's different kinds of eagernesses. There's the eagerness for sense gratification. Or, because I was just in focused on Ramayana, there's the eagerness that Ravana had to be the conqueror of the world. He was very eager. There's demoniac eagerness. There's gross sense gratification eagerness. And there's spiritual eagerness. So it's very important that we have a goal and are clear about what the goal is. And then our activities are to align towards that goal. And it's true in material affairs and it's true in spiritual affairs. From association with Vaisheshika Prabhu, has he come here to Detroit area? May you become very fortunate and one day he'll come. Yay. But better watch out. You'll get focused on book distribution. If you don't want to get focused on book distribution, don't have Vaisheshika Prabhu come here. Because if he comes here, that's what's going to happen. And it doesn't exclude other things, but other things include book distribution. So one of the principles that we have observed, and he has also observed, and he's helped promote, is set a goal. I'll come back to Bhagavan Vishate Hridi, but it's a goal. Our goal of becoming situated in love for Krishna. So for situated in a, he was I don't think he'll be at all difficult problem for me to share this with you. He was being invited something like what you have out here in Farmington, a nice center coming up. So he was invited by the temple president over there, Premananda Dasi, to come visit. And then he contacted me and said, is this something that you want? And I said, of course. I've been begging you for years. Please come. But, specifically, so it came down to if the leadership wants to set a goal for book distribution, not just like have a nice time and have Vaisheshika Prabhu's association, and he leads wonderful kirtan. He's very charismatic, very charming, knows 1.5 million slokas, and just spontaneously he's like a Globjaman. He's really just such a sweet devotee. Of course you want his association, but he wants results, he wants goals. So I said, if the leadership, the GBC, and the local leadership, president, and whatever the group of people that help guide the project, if they want to set a goal, even if it's a little one, then I'll come. Because you're a growing community. This here also is relevant. It's a growing community. I like talking about book distribution too, along with Srimad Bhagavatam, because it's something that is pleasing to our founder Acharya. And it's pleasing to our founder Acharya because it was pleasing to his spiritual master, and it's pleasing to them because is pleasing to the disciplic succession. So, once you set a goal, it's a principle. The intelligence starts to work how to reach the goal. And if you don't set a goal, then it's very fuzzy. Let's increase book distribution.
Yeah.
It doesn't go anywhere. But when you set a goal, then the intelligence, right away. Just like having a goal of opening the center. All kinds of things you have to, and if you don't have one of them, like a certificate of occupancy, you can't have a center. You got to know what it takes to, so there's a whole bunch of, and how, what do you do to get the certificate of occupancy? What, when you have a goal, the intelligence starts to move towards the goal. And same if you don't have a goal of, you know, Krishna prema. And your heart isn't there, you just say Krishna prema because that's what all the Prabhus say. They say Krishna prema. But when you have a clear idea, when you start to get a clear idea, you start to get a clear idea what that is, then the intelligence starts, how do I mold my life in such a way that that goal can be attained? And it's not by material means. It's not because you have a BA or an MA or an MS or a whatever, you know, a PhD. It's something, it has to come from another place besides the head. Your heart has to say yes. And then you can hear with this eagerness, because the hearing process is what carries you to the goal. We can't get to the goal. We can be willing participants to get to the goal, but there's a whole lot of mercy required to get to the goal, otherwise we're not going to get there. Shunvata Shunhaya Nityam. So in earnestness, so the earnestness, Shunvata Shunhaya Nityam, not, you know, from time to time, but in a, at least, Nityam literally means always, and a more generous, kind of liberal is regularly. Shunvata Sukata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana. We regularly hear in earnestness. Prabhupada in the word for word, regularly, comma, always. So there's a qualitative way of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam that helps us get to the goal. Of Bhagavan appearing, Shamsundar appearing, Govinda appearing, the personal, the complete personal feature of the Supreme Personality of God appearing in your heart can come just from hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. There's other things that you do when you want to hear Srimad Bhagavatam nicely, like chant your japa and follow codes of conduct that make you a civilized person, you know, a soul and a human form of life that's leading a life of theistic conduct. You know, the head part doesn't drop, but it's not the lead part. The lead part is wanting to be in your relationship with Krishna and with Krishna. Although I'm not at all qualified or eligible, other than he's very merciful and we have representatives of him to associate with that are very merciful. In this case, it's Maharaj Parikshit hearing from Shukadeva Goswami. Can't get any better than that. Or in disciplic succession from them, hearing properly. So, Shunvata Shraddhaya Nityam Grinantascha Cha Sva Cheshtitam Grananta means you take the matter that you have heard, the subject matter that you have heard, to the heart. Shrinvanti Gayanti. Grananti Sadhavaha. So, Grananta Cha Swacheshtatam. Swacheshtatam is, word for word, seriously by one's own endeavor. So there's something that we're making an endeavor to hear earnestly, with great attention, and considering, how do I bring it into my heart? How do I make it part or inseparable from my life? Kalena nati dirgena. Kalena nati dirgena. Not the kala, the duration of time, is na, is not ati dirgena, for a prolonged period of time. Very quickly. Now, very quickly is a relative term. Quickly compared to what? Quickly compared to other processes. Vijnana and karma and yoga processes, for example. We heard just this morning where Kardava Muni speaking to the personality of Godhead, his son, Kapila Dev, saying that yogis, this is Prabhupada in his purport, may spend many lifetimes living in seclusion, living a very sense-controlled and mind-controlled life, practicing the yoga system, and many will still not see the personality of Godhead. But there has to be a total dedication of that arduous process to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and then maybe they'll see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, of course, this is also a maybe, because it's because it's dependent upon the mercy of the Supreme Lord to show himself. But the process is kalena nati dirgena. It doesn't require a long, long time. It's a very merciful process. Unqualified become qualified quickly, kalena nati dirgena, not for a long, 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 long time. It's customized for Kali Yuga. It's for persons that are, you know, unfortunately influenced by the age in which we live. We're products of our times. And our times are very seriously in opposition to spiritual progress. So regularly, in earnestness, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam qualifies one so that the personality of Godhead Bhagavan becomes situated in the heart very quickly. It's like an advertisement. Marketing. The potency of Srimad Bhagavatam, it's not an exaggeration. That potency is there. So let's hear Srila Prabhupada's purport. Cheap devotees or materialistic devotees of the Lord are very much desirous to see the Lord personally without meeting the requisite qualifications. Such third-grade devotees should know well that material attachment and seeing the Lord face-to-face cannot go together. It is not such a mechanical process that, by the professional Bhagavatam reciters, can do the job on behalf of the third-grade materialistic pseudo-devotee. The professional men are useless in this connection because they are neither self-realized nor interested in the liberation of the audience. They are simply interested in maintaining the material establishment of family attachment and earning some material benefits out of the profession. Maharaj Parikshit had no more than 7 days to live. But for others, Maharaj Parikshit personally recommends that one hear Srimad Bhagavatam regularly Nityam, always by one's own effort and with serious devotion also. That will help one see the Lord Sri Krishna manifested in one's heart within no time. Well, sometime. Quickly. It's a short second paragraph. The pseudo devotee, however, is very anxious to see the Lord according to his own whims, not making any serious effort to hear Srimad Bhagavatam regularly and without detachment from material benefit. That is not the way recommended by an authority like Maharaj Parikshit, who heard and benefited by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. So where's our host? He's out hosting somewhere. big smiling face. When you have your Bhakti Vriksha gatherings, do you normally cover one verse per day or a cluster of verses, or how do you do it? I want to follow your program. Okay. Okay, fine. Because I have a lot to say. This is... thank you. Most of you know I was recently in India conducting a visit to Ayodhya and Chitrakoot, and we also visited Naimisharanya because they're all geographically close by. And on the concluding day, it was kind of like a summary of what our experience had been. And this is one of three verses that I recited or made reference to summarize what our whole experience was. Now, we were hearing not specifically from Srimad Bhagavatam, primarily from Valmiki Ramayana, but other authorized versions of Ramayana as well, identifying some of the differences. But the essence is hearing the topics of the personality of Godhead from authoritative sources in disciplic succession. And the potency of that is as described. Another verse was from 12th canto, chapter 13. It's next to the last chapter in the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, where Shukadeva Goswami, the final chapter is Sutta speaking about Shukadeva, but chapter 13 is Shukadeva speaking about the Bhagavatam, saying, one of the glories is one who regularly hears with faith, similar qualifier, Shadhaya, hear with faith. Very quickly, the affinity for finding happiness through fruitive activities is dissolved because it's replacing it as another happiness. Now, I'm going to say something that I like a lot twice, and I'm letting you know ahead of time I'm going to say it twice because it's so important. Srila Prabhupada said, one of the primary duties of a spiritual master is to thoroughly convince the disciple or explain to the disciple the abject futility of finding happiness through fruitive activities. I'll say it again because it's so important. One of the primary responsibilities of a spiritual master is to thoroughly instruct his disciples on the abject futility of finding happiness through fruitive activities. So that's like a no or a stop. But if you put a stop over here, energy has to go somewhere. if, just like Bhagavad Gita, when we're in the world of duality, and one of the first instructions of Krishna is to be tolerant of duality. Matra sparsha stakontaya satoshna sukha dukkha da. So if you're going to be tolerant of duality, your attention has to go somewhere, into transcendence. Now, our process is hearing of transcendence. We're not there, but we're part of it. That's the reality that we are eternally part of. We've forgotten, because we're over here in this world of duality, thinking that's real, over here. And we can't let go of over here, because what happens? Like Krishna, Arjuna says to Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, if I don't complete this process that you're recommending, then am I not like a riven cloud with no position in any sphere? I tried to leave the material and I didn't get there, and so I didn't reach the spiritual, so I'm nowhere. I'm neither here nor there. What about that, Krishna? And Krishna said, no. Any progress that you make spiritually, that's permanent. Now that you have no position in any sphere, that you're that much closer. So supposing we're like most devotees, we're one of many, one of most of the devotees, that we don't like the material, although we're attached to it. At least some of the things that we're attached to. And, you know, just honestly, realistically, we're attached to. And it seems quite comfortable, natural, and if there's some pull and tug away from that source of misery, the attachment to the temporary, we say, ouch. And that's our condition, and we're somehow at the same time supposed to go towards the spiritual. This is the last paragraph, by the way, of the purport. Materialistic person can't make spiritual progress. Kind of. You can't start a fire and pour water on it at the same time. You can't be attached to the temporary, asat, Trishna, at the same time become Sat Trishna. They don't go together. The thirst for Sat is not enhanced by thirst for Asat. What to do? Hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Because what Shukadeva Goswami says is the thirst for finding happiness through fruitive activities diminishes, and it dissipates and it's gone. Just by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam doesn't mean you sell your house and go live in a forest. It means the attachment to the happiness derived by proprietorship and being the enjoyer of the objects that we are the proprietors of. That proprietorship and the enjoyment propensity dissolves. The house doesn't dissolve. You don't have to change the externals of your life. There may be some externals that you'll change, but you don't have to change having externals in your life. But the attachment to those things, that changes. Because where your attachment goes changes. Just by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. The expectation for happiness now I'm happy. So the expectation for happiness goes to another place. It goes to your position of being the servant of Bhagavan. And then everything that you do is for that purpose. That's the goal. And then the intelligence starts to move towards how can I reach the goal? How can I do this aspect of my life, that aspect of, you know, the clothes that I wear, and how I engage in relationships with others, and how I speak, and how I spend my discretionary time, and what it means, how I don't spend discretionary time in certain ways, and I will spend discretionary time in other ways, because the goal is clear. And the goal becomes more focused the more we hear. It's just, you bring an object closer to a fire and it gets warm. It's very simple. And if the fire of regularly hearing Srimad Bhagavatam with faith, that this is a medium, an activity prescribed by the personality of Godhead, that will carry me to Him. He wants me to come to Him more than I want to come to Him. And He's giving the means for me to come to Him. And I just say yes. And I do it regularly. With faith, it'll help me get to Him. And you become spiritualized. And as you become spiritualized, material affinity diminishes. So what are some of the qualifiers? Regularly. With faith, for some period of time. Now, that description that I just gave matches what Patanjali Muni says in his Yoga Sutras. I learned this from Jiva Goswami. I don't know what Patanjali Yoga Sutras say, but I know what Jiva Goswami says. And Jiva Goswami says that according to Patanjali, something is qualified to consider practice. He uses the word abhyasa, we use the word sadhana. If it has three elements, it's done regularly for a period of time with a purpose. With faith that the good place that you want to go can be achieved. Now the good place you want to go, what do we know? But from scriptures, it's Krishna Prema, that's the goal. There's Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojan. The Prayojan is Krishna Prema, the goal. And we're learning what that goal is. And the goal is, you know, it's supposed to be really nice. And our sense of what's really nice is, you know, absent the misery. That's what really nice is. But that's not what really nice is. That's just the flip side of, you know, the heads and tails of the same coin. It's not heaven. That's free because heaven isn't free from misery. Heaven has its problems too. Birth, disease, the disease in old age, for starters. And then there's the demons that want to take over the kingdom of heaven. So, happiness that replaces the material circumstance needs a totally different definition, and that happiness is the relationship of loving service to the person. We learn that gradually just by the hearing process, by the hearing from the proper sources, not the professional sources, but the proper sources, with faith. So I want to say one other thing. Not only the Srimad Bhagavatam is glorified in Srimad Bhagavatam, but Srimad Bhagavatam is glorified in most of the Puranas in very explicit terms. The Bhagavad Purana is considered by the other Puranas as the monarch, the emperor of kings. It's the best. And one of those literatures that glorifies the Bhagavatam in those terms is Padma Purana. Of the 18 Puranas, 6 of them are in the mode of goodness. Padma Purana is one of them. And the Padma Purana has a whole big section called Bhagavat Mahatmya that's glorifying Srimad Bhagavatam. In the Padma Purana, it's glorifying Bhagavat Purana. When we visited Naimisharanya, because it's geographically close to the other places we were visiting, we heard another Bhagavat Mahatmya. So there's two references. Bhagavat Mahatmya in Padma Purana speaks about, it's a very complicated, long, involved story, but it's this quickly, without the names and the details. There's a brahmana and a brahmani, husband and wife. They are not having children, so the wife's sister has a child, and they're given a son, and the son is given to them to take care of. And then they adopt another son. And the adopted son becomes bad. He becomes wicked, cruel, merciless, and he dies and becomes a ghost. And in the village, he haunts people. You know, he spooks people. And so some people are really, you know, very critical of this ghost that's haunting and harming people. But his brother, you say stepbrother, he has great faith in the Bhagavatam. And so he recites the Bhagavatam for 7 days. For the benefit of his departed ghost brother. At the end of the 7-day recitation of the Bhagavatam, the ghost brother, who has been condemned by everybody, shows himself in the form before he died, before he became a ghost, and falls at the feet of his brother and expresses his sincere, deep gratitude for his effort of reciting Srimad Bhagavatam. And right before everyone's eyes, Vaikuntha Vimana descends to take him back to Godhead. And as he's getting on the Vimana to go back to Godhead, the brother that was the Bhagavatam reciter said, "Wait a minute here. What's the eligibility of this person who was so wicked and so sinful that he became a ghost, and now he's going back to Godhead, when the benefit should be equally distributed to everybody? Because if the benefit is hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, and he became so much benefit because the prayers were, 'I've been cleansed and benefited by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, and they're taking me back to Godhead now,' why wasn't everybody? No, why wasn't there Vimana, Vaikuntha Vimana for all of us? Myself too. And all the other people that were assembled here that heard Srimad Bhagavatam." That's the Bhagavatam reciter brother addresses the representatives of Lord Narayan. And they say, so this is the qualitative hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam. What qualities do we need to bring to the activity of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam? That's what this section describes. They said that although he's been in a ghost body, when he was hearing every day, at the end of the day, doesn't say how he did this, he was doing his worship, and he was meditating on what he heard, and contemplating how he could bring that into his life, and as a result, he heard in such a manner that he's qualified. Then they gave some other criterion, like there's 4 criterion which I can't remember all of, but similar to the list. Faithfulness. I forget the list. I'll find it tomorrow evening. Whoever comes tomorrow evening, I'll make it. Who should I? Of the section that I'm referring to, I'll gladly circulate it. And I didn't know what we were going to be speaking about tonight, so I can't remember those four items. It's right in the sloka. The qualitative way that one should be hearing Srimad Bhagavatam so that one gets full benefit. Anyway, one of them is with faith, another is applying what you've heard. Ah, good association, something. So, you have it? Oh, wow. Vishvaso Guru Vakyeshu, four things required to be able to hear. Vishvaso Guru Vakyeshu. Vishvasa, Guru Vakyeshu. You have faith in the words of the spiritual master. Svasmin Dinatve Bhavana. An attitude of humility towards one's own self-worth. Vishvasa. Dinatve. Swasmin dinatve. Dina. One feels oneself. You don't have an inflated sense of self-worth. You have a realistic sense of the how tiny we are, and we're not so big, not so important. Mano dosha jayas chaiva. Mano dosha, the faults of the mind. Vijaya, victorious over the faults of the mind. Katayam nishchara mati. Unswerving concentration on the topics. Nishchala mati. Katayam nishchala mati. Very attentive to the topics. We're distracted. We're distracted by distractions. We're distracted in principle. And the cultivation should be to become not distracted. And a major practice in becoming not distracted is how you chant the holy name. That's our primary daily activity that we all do. And you practice that carefully, it'll help you hear the Bhagavatam carefully. Nishchalamati. And when the hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam is done with these four characteristics, then it makes your hearing more effective. So with that, the agents of Vaikuntha disappear. And they say, but good news, very soon you'll be reciting Srimad Bhagavatam again, and because now you've heard, you've seen what this fellow that was a ghost is going back to Godhead, you'll hear it in a qualitatively different manner now. And you'll all go back to Godhead. So sure enough, sometime later, he recites Srimad Bhagavatam, and they all go back to Godhead. It's a happy story. But the message is, in addition to what, the how needs to be in place, and the what and the how will be in place if the why is in place. Like, what's the purpose of our life? And conversely, if you don't have a clear sense of what the purpose of life is, the how and the what aren't going to happen either. So we're not there yet. Therefore, at least on a regular basis, we should hear that much faith. And with that much faith, we hear. It's good for us. You know, brush your teeth. Every day, not sometimes. Because it's good for your mouth. Good for oral hygiene. Brush your teeth every day. So we brush our teeth every day. And when we hear Srimad Bhagavatam, the more we're mindful of what the purpose of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam is, the more we're mindful of what the holy name is, the more we'll be attentive to the holy name and more attentive to the Bhagavatam, and more quickly the why we're doing this becomes clearer. And the higher and higher sense. And the whole world of spiritual reality begins to open based upon doing the right thing in the right way for the right purpose. But for starters, regularly hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Regularly brush your teeth. Regularly chant the holy name. And regularly hear Srimad Bhagavatam. From the mode of goodness purpose that is good for you comes gradually the transcendental purpose, and the transcendental purpose gradually unfolds into the fruits and the flowers of love of God. Hare Krishna. So it looks like Uma already has the document, so however you circulate information, you can circulate this. There was a time when we didn't need computers. People just had sufficient memory and they'd hear it once, and I'm not like that. Any discussion? Yes?
I have a question, Maharaj.
Yeah?
In your discourse, thank you very much, Maharaj, for a wonderful class. In your discourse, you mentioned that while practicing Krishna consciousness, what is permanent is not lost. That is what Krishna mentions.
Mm.
So sometimes we see devotees, they practice Krishna consciousness, and they start going up in bhakti, and then suddenly they leave the process. Or sometimes you see them like, what I have seen, that they start degrading in their consciousness level. So how to see the statement that you mentioned in this thing?
Well, the statement doesn't say it can't be covered and forgotten. It says it's not lost. That's the distinction. Supposing in this life, we'll say by example rather than just precept, in this life I advance in Krishna consciousness 5%. Next life, I'll start at 5%, and then quickly move to 6%. I have seen, that when people join Krishna consciousness, like you said at the beginning, and then kind of hit a plateau. Some other people don't go that high, some people go higher, but very quickly, they just continue where they left off in their previous life, and now they have to do the additional brahminical work to go further. The 6%, 7%, 8%. But it's never lost. So then supposing they go away. Never lost. Supposing they die before it's completed, which is what Arjuna's question was. It's not lost. It stays with the soul, the spiritual. May be covered with forgetfulness, but it's not lost. Gold might be covered with something, but it's still gold. Did that answer your question? More? You want to pursue it further?
I was trying to understand that sometimes, even in my life, I have seen that I feel that I start degrading in my consciousness and then I feel like actually I didn't grow. So then I was trying to understand whether actually...
Well, that's a feeling. My statement still stands, or Krishna's statement still stands. It's not lost. The mind can become bewildered and distracted and out to lunch. But the soul is still connected to Krishna in a permanent way to the degree that you or someone else made spiritual connection. It may be forgotten and covered, but it's not lost. The mind may feel things.
What if in the process I end up doing some Vaishnava practice, then what happens?
Then it's very serious. But it's still not lost. It's Jiva Goswami makes a distinction between sin and offense. Sin is less serious, offense is more serious. Because sin can be eradicated by bhakti. And offense has the power to block the power of bhakti. It doesn't stop it, but it has the power to block it, its effectiveness. Aparad is very serious stuff. He compares it to, Bhaktivinoda Thakur compares it to clouds. So clouds have the power to block the power of the sun. The sun is fully bright, but over on this side of the cloud, the heat and the light of the sun diminish depending upon the thickness or density of the cloud. Similarly, according to the severity of offense, it blocks the power of bhakti. Now, what to do? So there's the what to do part. But your question wasn't what to do, it's what happens when there's offense. It's blocked. And there's degrees of what happens when it gets blocked. One may lose the taste. Practicing becomes difficult. And there's other symptoms without listing them and describing. It's severities of fever. For medical comparison, you can have a headache, and then you can have a mild fever. Then you can have a very severe. You can be nearly dead with fever, and the conditions are different. The degrees of severity of offense have degrees of reaction. So we guard against offense. We recognize that we're in this weakened condition due to some past offense. And we make our best effort to turn to bhakti. You have to be clear what bhakti is and how to dial in bhakti and how to, despite the fact that in back there somewhere there's sin and there's offense. There's ignorance. Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls it the mist of ignorance and the clouds of offense, blocking the power of the sun. Ignorance is a little easier to deal with than it is offense. Knowledge addresses ignorance. Bhakti alone, with merciful association, with a good physician, helping the physician, the patient that has fever, and they know the medicine necessary, and it's just prolonged taking the right medicine over time, and gradually the fever breaks. The reaction to sin stays with us a long time, or excuse me, the reaction to offense stays with us for some time. That's what happens. The power of bhakti gets blocked. But the power of bhakti is still there. And the bhakti that we have accumulated, or the spiritual progress that we have made that we've forgotten, doesn't go away. I'll give a little example that Jiva Goswami gives. I find it really interesting. I like Jiva Goswami. So he gives the example of Bharat Maharaj and King Riga. He analyzes that Bharat Maharaj is said about Bharat Maharaj that due to his a past desire that was not fulfilled, that's karma, the deer manifest. Now, then Jiva Goswami analyzes, if prarabdha karma comes, that's not, that can't stand with bhakti because bhakti dismisses karma. And therefore the deer, and not just the deer, but the attachment to the deer, the conscious choice that he made to stop his devotional practice and instead take care of the deer was the result of a previous offense, fructifying in that form of making the conscious choice to go away from his spiritual practice and his spiritual goal. But what happened after that, he didn't, he learned from that mistake. I'm not going to let that tendency rule me again. He learned. You know, it's a hard lesson, become a deer. And then, the rest of what happened is Jed Bharat. But he didn't lose it. It carried over to his life of Jed Bharat. And King Nriga, Jiva Goswami explains, he was a bhakta. And he, as a king, he had this hearing about Krishna, like we're hearing about Krishna. He heard about Krishna and he desired very strongly to see Krishna. So he was a Krishna bhakta, that desired to see Krishna. But he didn't have full faith in bhakti, so he thought, well, over here I'm going to do some hedging. I'm going to make some investments over here in giving cows and charity to the brahmanas, just, you know, so it'll augment the Krishna bhakti factor. Because of that, the whole situation took place where the cow went to the brahmana and then wandered away and became the property of another brahmana, that whole story. He came back and then he gave the cow to another brahmana. The curse came because of his lack of faith. It's not having full faith and maintaining material attachments. It's one of the offenses. So he was cleansed of the offense, and the result was he saw Krishna. He became a lizard, and then Krishna touched him, and he became the king again and saw Krishna. Due to offense, Jiva Goswami explains. So that's just a long answer to your question. What happens when we make some offense? Bhakti gets blocked. And we get situated in darkness. Even we're doing bhakti, the fullness of the potency of bhakti is not something we experience. We lose our eligibility for that. We have to work through it. And Jiva Goswami says, it's not just this lifetime. We're carrying a whole bundle, a burden of offenses from previous lifetimes. We're born with that package. Have to deal with it. And bhakti is the means to deal with it. It's just going to be a little slower, depending upon the degree of offense of this life and previous lifetimes. We all have to deal with what we've done. We're responsible for our attitudes and our conduct and our speech. Yes.
Thank you so much, Maharaj. It was very enlightening and hope to them for the faith and Bhagavatam that you mentioned. My question is, you mentioned that this futility of finding happiness in this material world, but
specifically, fruitive activities.
Yeah.
The futility of finding happiness through fruitive activity. Being in the material world is not the problem.
So my question was, even after knowing that the goal of life is some sitting meditation, we still have two desires in our mind regarding maybe our career or job.
Sure.
And sometimes we feel we are not utilizing our potential to the fullest. So we're still lacking the desire to leave our material attachments. Maybe we think we can handle both material and spiritual together. As you said, it's not possible. You mentioned that before we leave material attachments, we can't progress in spiritual life.
Sounds like we're stuck, huh?
So how to deal with such desires?
Okay.
Not that we are leaving spirituality.
I got it. It's a standard question. And you won't be surprised to know that there's an answer to it in Scripture. And one of those answers, one of my favorite ones, is in Uddhava Gita, Krishna explains precisely, as you know, faith, there is my devotee who has faith in serving me. At the same time, due to prolonged material contact, they have affinity for matter. They have some desires to be enjoyers of matter. They know, because they're faithful devotees, it leads to misery. But they're attached. So they go on with the process that nourishes their faith in me by hearing about me and serving me and worshiping me, while they're also conducting their affairs in this material way, knowing that it's not going to bring the happiness, it's going to prolong misery, but that doesn't take away from their faith in the bhakti process. I mean, that's not his words, but I'm paraphrasing like that. They know where that path goes, that there's some tendency to go on that path, and so they go. Knowing it's not going to get to the goal. I'm investing faith over here, and I'm doing these things over here because it's just part of my conditioning, and I'm just being honest with myself, that's part of my conditioning, so I'm doing that. With faith that the bhakti will diminish this affinity over here. Now, another way of answering the same thing that's a little simpler is the dovetail message. And Brahma Samhita text 61. Write it down. And you can read the purport. And the question that you're asking is, Lord Brahma doesn't ask it. Right after all those wonderful Brahma Samhita prayers, Govinda Madhi Purusham, etc., there's five concluding verses. So he has all these wonderful, outstanding, very high realizations, and he has this propensity to create a universe. He has involvement in his career, his creating a universe career. And it's far more complex than anything we're going to do. And he's worried, if I go over there and do that, I may lose track of bhakti. And if I don't do that, then I'll be incurring sin by not doing my duty. So, you know, damned if I do and damned if I don't, so what do I do? He didn't articulate the question, but Krishna, knowing his heart, answers the question in that series of verses. And 61 specifically, Bhaktisiddhanta identifies different areas of our life, career being one of them, but you know, social, interpersonal, bodily needs. We have creatures, and we want our creature comforts, and we want our creature friends, and our sense of achievement. And he lists them. This one includes this set of things, that one includes those set of things. And he says, if we dedicate those things and join those things to the direct bhakti process, then those things become as purifying as the direct bhakti process. They become spiritualized. That's the dovetail message. The trick is, or the danger is, the subtlety is, complacency. Oh, it's authorized. I can do my career and I can become a Krishna Bhakta too. I can follow these attachments that I have and be a Krishna Bhakta too. It's great. It's a good program. All the perks and all the rewards, but at the same time I can live my material life. So the subtlety is joining them for the purpose of pleasing Krishna. Take the career or whatever are the other items, family or whatever, having a house or whatever the other items are, and how is this best dedicated to Krishna's service? That's the why, the goal of my life. You know, I'm learning about it because of the hearing and chanting activities. How do I go about this? A question was asked this morning, a series of refinements, of realigning ourselves. If we're lazy, we're Kali Yuga folks, and so we're lazy. Manda sumanda matayo, manda bhagya, yupadrita. We're lazy, misguided, unfortunate, just always disturbed. So we don't do that series of refinements. We just, you know, close our eyes and go. So the question that you're raising comes from the voice of someone that wants the goal but recognizes those other things are also in the jar of my life. How do I handle those things? Dedicate them to service of Krishna. Learn the art of how to do that and refine it and refine it and keep... By saying that, you're cultivating bhakti. That's the means to reach the goal. And the other things are there, dedicate those things to the cause of bhakti, pleasing Krishna. Following our previous acharyas, anushilana. You know the meaning from anu? Shilana. We cultivate the shila, the activities, the conduct of great souls. Anu shilana. For the purpose of pleasing Krishna. That's the realignment. For the purpose of pleasing Krishna. Bhakti. That's the heart. So I don't have to throw away career or family or home or social, or I have to be focused on bhakti, do that for Krishna. And I learned, as one learns the art of bhakti, you learn how to do that better, more completely, more purely, more powerfully, more upliftingly for you and for those who are around you, who come in contact with you. You become a bhakti surcharger because you've gone through that exercise of refining and realigning and conscientious to reach the goal. Nourished by the hearing and chanting process. The water and the sunlight that grows the seed to become a flowering plant and fruit-bearing tree. Yeah.
You mentioned that offenses are like the clouds that block the sun.
Here's the microphone. Offenses are like clouds that block the power of bhakti.
So when one is in that situation, how does one get out of that situation?
Well, association and hearing and chanting.
So you had also mentioned that when one is in that state, there's loss of taste of everything else. So
what do you do when you have a fever? You go to a doctor. And the doctor says, you got a fever. He said, doctor, I could have told you I have a fever. What do I do about the fever? Here's the medicine, here's the diet. Right?
And devotees are already chanting and taking association and still feel that, for example, I guess I sometimes feel that this is what is what I'm going through is a loss the taste, I think.
Hmm.
So
it's due to offense.
So that's the
and so now what to do when you've lost the taste due to offense? That's the question.
Right.
You go to a doctor and he gives you the medicine of the diet. And we're given the medicine of the diet. Yeah, and with faith. With faith means it's good medicine. Bhavosha dat shrota manobi ramad. It's medicine you take through the ear. It's very powerful medicine. There isn't a better medicine for the disease of Kali Yuga. The person who has lost taste. It's perfect medicine. So with faith in the medicine, because it helps. Yes? I mean, one of the in medical practice, I've learned from those who are medical practitioners and from research of Harvard Medical School, when the tooth faith has a big capacity in healing, both from medical studies, when a patient has some spiritual discipline and faith and they regularly do that spiritual discipline, they heal better with the same doctors, the same disease, the same hospital, the same medicine, the same everything. Their healing is better. And when the patient, in addition, when the patient has faith in the medicine and the physician, their healing is better than if they're just, say, doing mechanically without investing faith in the physician and the power of the physician as a healer. It helps the healing process. So faith is a big item. It's, you know, mentioned in Bhagavad Gita and mentioned here in the Bhagavatam. So how much, although I'm in this weakened condition, the taste has, same as the initial question. In the very beginning, we make very rapid progress because we haven't made any offenses recently. And then we start to practice, we associate with devotees, we chant the holy name, and we start making offenses. And then the taste goes down, sine curve. Then we have to recommit ourselves with a deeper sense of purpose and, you know, a greater clarity about what our life mission is and, you know, the means to achieve it. It's okay. the standard, not just you. It's all of us. We all know exactly what you're talking about. And we see it happen again and again and again and again and again and again and again. So, you know, misery loves company. We're not alone. We're in the same boat together. And then there's medicine. And there's a diet. And there's a good physician.
Thank you, Amit. Continuing on the offense and Amit, you know, by theory, offense is dangerous and deadly. Still, because of the uncontrolled senses and probably the fit of anger, we speak things what we are not supposed to speak. And do things what we are not supposed to do. And it has a very serious bad consequences actually. Still, the problem is, we do these offenses again and again. I heard, for the offense to happen, there should be an element of envy.
There should be what?
Element of envy. So we should be envious of other person. Should be envious of, somewhere, maybe Adnan Chintamani, but...
I'm having a hard time with the microphone amplification system. I'm not following. I'm getting about 60 to 70% of your words.
My thing is basically, you know, we speak what we are not supposed to speak, despite knowing, because there is a ego. When whatever we say, we think we are right. Then what happens again after some time? Oh, this might have constituted an offense, and we see that also. Then actually, you made a point. It blocks the progress. Then how do you make sure, we just go forward on the path of bhakti with at least 10 miles an hour without being blocked actually. We need to have certain parameters, or at least we need to have certain things in our hand. You don't do this, don't do this. Otherwise, the bhakti that we have been doing for a very long time, it is seriously hindered, you know, it's seriously blocked by this apparat. And I don't want to go for that, go through that painful experience. How do we make sure this doesn't recur again and again and again?
Your thoughts weren't well ordered, but I think I understand what you're asking. How do we, what is the, is the, is your question, we suffer due to offenses and we don't want to see it, the continued offenses and continued suffering from those offenses. What is to be done to prevent offenses to not reoccur again and again? The same offense or similar offenses? That's your question. It seems to be inhibited by the fact that tendencies repeat themselves just by nature. A tendency, to say a fault finder, has a tendency to fault find. And then they'll make the offense and then do it again and do it again and do it again and do it again. It gets worse, more severe. Fever gets more severe. So, we need a good association. And, of course, good association can mean I can make more serious offenses with that good association. So there has to be something, a willingness to go on the other side, which you indicated, ego blocks us from doing it because we think we're the right. Otherwise we wouldn't do it because it's not right. So some humility is essential. And that's this, the first item in that list of four things is not having an inflated sense of self. The quality of humility is essential. to go on the other side of offensiveness. I need help. I'm tiny, and I'm in this circumstance that's complicated, and et cetera, et cetera. I need help. And I need good association to help me. Not another person that's crippled like me. I need a good association to help me. I need a good physician. I need to invest faith in that good physician and follow the prescription of the physician, because otherwise the good association is one, the real good association is one who gives bhakti. I very quickly, to reiterate, to say the same thing you're saying in another context. There's an Ayurvedic doctor that I was seeing when my health was the light was almost out. I was almost gone. And he helped me regain my health. And he was in the process of opening an Ayurvedic clinic. And he took me through the building, and up on this floor we do this, and that floor we do that, and down, down, down. Through the whole, down to the basement, and said, here's where we train our clinicians in the Ayurvedic treatment center here. So I as an Ayurvedic practitioner, have confidence that the skill that I've been given by my Ayurvedic guru, I can take people that have imbalance of doshas and balance it. But when they leave here and they go back out and live the same lifestyle, they're going to be in the same situation. And therefore we need people like you, pointing to me, saying you can help people change their lifestyle, but the change of lifestyle has to be with the willingness to change lifestyle. There has to be a willingness, back to your question, of the person to go on the other side of a certain pattern. And of course they think that they're right, because otherwise they can't live their life. But they also have to have humility and recognize it's not 100% right. I need redirection in my life. I need to follow someone that can give me direction in my life. I need a spiritual guide. I need teachings and a teacher that can guide me in applying those teachings and live my life in a corrected fashion. So some willingness from our side, adau shraddha, tata sadhu sangha. And then bhajana kriya and so forth. Even in that scenario, you know and I know, because we guide people, tendencies to do the same foolish things occur again and again anyways, even with guidance. And so, but then the guiding person needs to have the right touch and skill to help people recognize you're doing the same thing again. And my advice is, don't do the same thing again. Let's take a look at some other options besides the same thing again. And which one do you like? And whatever the one that you like is, make sure that these basic elements are there. Because otherwise it's just going to repeat itself again. And you want to go beyond the repeating itself again, right? Yeah. Okay, so I'll help you go down this path. So sadhu sangha includes giving the medicine, but also helping people apply the medicine and taking it regularly and getting on the other side of the repeating of the tendencies again and again. And just like this question here, the loss of taste because of having made some offense and doing the offensive thing again and again. And so, I'm weak. I need strength beyond my own strength. Okay, I can help you. But you have to want to get beyond your weakness, that lack of taste and the offense that brought the lack of taste. And it may take some time, but let's work on it together like that.
In that, I asked the first one, blasts from the devotees are dedicated their lives to profusion. is it true that there should be an element of envy with an intent, with a malicious intention to bring that other party down? We speak something that we are not supposed to speak. I mean, there is an element of envy, definitely, may not be directed towards them. What is your...
What to do about envy? That's your question?
No. Suppose we may speak about somebody...
Person A speaks about person B.
Right. And in that, there is only a desire to correct, but there is no desire to bring the other party down.
So A simply wants to bring person B up, not to bring person B down. That's why they're saying what they're saying to person B.
Right.
There's no envy involved, but person B thinks that there is.
Right.
Huh?
Then does it constitute an offense on part of A?
Is A the offender or B the offender? That's your question?
A is trying to correct B.
The intention is what's important. How the intention is perceived is not an offense. Prabhupada would correct people. And it wasn't with the intention of putting people down. It was the intention of bringing... And he would say sometimes, as you know, very heavy things. He didn't do it all the time. Sometimes very heavy things. But his intention was to bring people up. And people would say, you know, Swamiji, why are you so heavy? But he didn't always do that. So your question specifically is, if person A is giving some message to person B, and the intention is to elevate person B, to help them, relieve them of some difficulty they're going through, whatever it is, and that's their intention, and person B perceives, oh, you're envious, does that constitute an offense by person A to person B because it's perceived as coming from a place of envy? Well, you know, ultimately Krishna knows, and that's the standard. It doesn't mean it's zero. You know that story from Bhakti Ratnakar where Rupa Goswami was meditating at a pastime of Krishna and the Brahmin passed by and he thought he was laughing at him. Total disconnection between what Rupa Goswami was doing and the Brahmin that was passing by. But the Brahmin felt he was being laughed at. So it's not a zero, but in relation to Krishna, it's not a 10 either. When we're interacting with others, practically speaking, guaranteed there's going to be misunderstanding. We don't stop acting. We just reevaluate what our intention is. That this recalibration of our bhakti, exhibiting bhakti, living our life in devotion to others. And is it coming from the place of bhakti alone? And that's our project. Lifelong project. Last question.
I've heard it said that listening to the Bhagavad Gita is sort of like at a master's degree or bachelor's degree level, and listening to the Srimad Bhagavatam is like listening to a PhD level. So how would they compare in terms of potency? And does one, when you're more of a neophyte and maybe able to relate slightly better to the Gita than to the Srimad Bhagavatam, or there's greater interest in the Gita, how potent is that?
How potent is the question?
How powerful, you know, like here we're talking about, a lot of what you said was in terms of how powerful the Srimad Bhagavatam is, yes, and the importance, the supremacy of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So where does the Gita fit in?
Where does Bhagavad Gita fit into that hierarchy, is your question?
Yeah, and how effective, how potent is it to help us move forward?
Well, they go together. To say, first, just the language that Prabhupada used, just correcting the beginning, editing the original part of the frame of your question, undergraduate and graduate, not PhD, undergraduate, graduate study, and then there's postgraduate study. That's Chaitanya Charitamrita. To say that the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam, it's inclusive to say the glories of Bhagavad Gita and the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's Srimad Bhagavatam, but to access Srimad Bhagavatam, it's not imperative. You could read Bhagavatam without having read Bhagavad Gita. You can read Bhagavad Gita without having read the Bhagavatam. But it's the undergraduate and graduate study. There's so much more detail of explaining things in the Bhagavatam compared to Bhagavad Gita. Principles of karma, principles of creation, the process of creation, the 24 elements, and the unfolding of the 24 elements, and it's there in Bhagavad Gita. And it's so much more expanded in the Bhagavatam. The pastimes of the Lord. Yada yada hi dharma shukla nirba. And then there's the Bhagavatam giving details and details of forms of the Lord that appear in this world when there's dharma shaglani, discrepancy in dharma. And here's how he does it this time, and here's how he does it in that incarnation. And but the principles are there in Bhagavad Gita, and they're expanded upon, thus the graduate study, in the Bhagavatam. So they're completely companion. So your question specifically is the potency of both. The potency is one can say equal. One is very concentrated, and the other is expanded, and there's a special benefit of the Bhagavatam in that it's two things. It's spoken by Shukadeva Goswami, and therefore the ripened mango becomes even sweeter because touched by the lips of Shukadeva. It has a special transcendental potency, even more so than his father Vyasadeva teaching it to him. When he speaks it, it's even sweeter, which is a distinction between the two. It's not exactly the potency, but the sweetness of the two. And second is the Mahabharata and the four Vedas and the Puranas and everything was compiled by Vyas before this rewrite of Srimad Bhagavatam. The rewrite of Srimad Bhagavatam is the mature fruit of the Vedic Nigama Kalpator Galitam Palam. The Vedas are compared to a Kalpaturu, a desire tree. And the ripened fruit of the desire tree is the Bhagavatam. Nigama Kalpator Galitam Palam. It's the ripened fruit of the desire tree of the Nigamas of the Vedas. And therefore it has its, so the fruit and then the fully ripened fruit. We'll end there. Thank you all very much. You're the Prabhupada King of Jai.
Yeah.